Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, we'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elves, joined from a safe distance by my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
And on the bullpen phone, Chris Zook.
Hello, everybody.
What are we going to do when we're no longer at a safe distance? The whole entire intro is going to be messed up.
I'm going to have to relearn how to, I'll have to play like old episodes to relearn how to do it.
Right.
Now, normally we would tip our cap or pour one out, but for me, I think the passing of Hank Aaron, we should just like doff our caps and put them on our hearts today. It was announced shortly before our show aired last week. However, we tape on Thursday nights, so it was something we did not get to last week. So we are going to start with the passing of Henry Aaron. And I mean, really one of the absolute,
I think, titans. Like legacy icon. There's not enough superlatives to really talk about Henry Hank Aaron, right? I think it's just, I mean, you could talk hours and it still wouldn't be enough of sort of his legacy to baseball.
Yeah, no, I had
and
read
to society
a biography of Hank Aaron, of course, growing up, and you know, didn't see the him chasing Babe Ruth's home run record, so really like kind of read about it in hindsight, but it'd been a while since I'd really kind of reflected on his like place in the game, particularly, I mean, when we talk about, you know, some of the racism and the issues with, you know, decline of black players in the game, and just the like pure vitriol that he received. You know, I was reading up I think it was Joe Posnanski's piece in The Athletic talking about he had received the award from the U.S. Postal System as like the most the person receiving the most mail, private mail, in the year that he was leading up to beating Babe Ruth. Only like the vast majority of it was hate mail.
Yeah.
And he read all of it.
And he kept them. And so the interesting thing is, people don't know a lot about the story, is that Hank Aaron there, he was close to the record, I believe, in is it 73 or 74? Basically, he ends the season and he's like 4 or 5 away, and he has to come back the next year to kind of get the record. And so what happens is that whole off season, there's this huge build, like he's sitting on like 3 or 4 away from the record, right? And obviously there's this ardent amount of support for Babe Ruth, and a lot of people didn't want, I mean, people didn't want Roger Maris to get Babe Ruth's record when he smashed it for the single season, but for the overall record, it was a whole off season that built towards, you know, when Henry Aaron makes a record. But yeah, that whole kind of in between period where he was just inundated with just hate mail from all over the place.
Guys, good enough to have two separate Hall of Fame careers, pretty much.
That was the other thing, reading back and reflecting on his stats. Like,
his stats are insane. I mean, they're insane, right, Michael?
His career triple slash, including the 3 years at the end of his career where he was like replacement level. 74, 75, 76, 74, 75, 76. He wasn't good. And he wasn't super great in his rookie season either. And so, like, including those three so-so seasons, his triple slash is 305, 374, 555. That's insane. You know, walked more than he struck out, which is always a good sign. Had a career a WRC plus. So again, for those uninitiated in the stats community, 100 is average. So his career WRC plus is 153, which means he was a 50% better than the average hitter. You know, had several seasons over 8 wins above replacement, which is like all time incredible levels. Finished his career with 136.3 wins above replacement. Never had a single season worth negative wins above replacement, and was just like one of the most consistent players over the course of his entire career. Just incredible.
Well, let me even throw a couple more stats. Right, I believe he did not hit more than 47 home runs in a single season in his career. Right, he was incredibly consistent. Right, I believe he had, is it 15 years of 30 or more home runs? Like he had this. Okay, there's a stat that no will never be broken. He played 21 seasons and he had 25 All-Star appearances. Right, so back
23 seasons
or 23 seasons. So yeah, so he had, I think, 59.
But there were multiple All-Star games.
62. There's multiple All-Star games. So he was in twice. And so that's an incredible stat. And then so reading up this, he still holds the major league records for most career runs batted in, total bases, and career extra base hits. Right. So
the total bases one, the next closest person, and I love this stat. Someone crunched the numbers so that like the distance between bases, he's 12 miles.
That's insane.
12 miles worth of bases ahead of the next closest person in total bases. It's like that is a record that will never be touched.
Like one of the most incredible, like if not the best, like he's one of the best players, one of the whatever five best players to ever play the game. Like, I mean, that's a pretty safe bet, right? One of the three best players to ever play the game, maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can, you know, I mean, that's the age old. I mean, you can get into debates, but I would say definitely top five, if not top three. And just, I mean, the longevity of it, right? The consistency of it is, I mean, he had two batting titles, right? So we always gravitate towards the home run record because it was so iconic and who he beat, and that it stayed for so long. And some people, even to this day, feel as he's the rightful home run king, right? But that said, it's just, I mean, the stats are just staggering what he did in a career that spanned, you know, close to, you know, border, you know, over two
quarter
decades.
Of a century, basically.
Yeah, pretty much a quarter of a century. And yeah, I mean, just phenomenal. And then, you know, and sort of where his legacy will continue to last is, you know, he was always a champion for African Americans to be, you know, more involved in the game. And I mean, you know, and so the Atlanta Braves are stepping up to spend some money on a fund to kind of keep that legacy going there. And yeah, so he was a champion on and off the field. And, you know, it's just someone like, if you didn't know anything about baseball, you certainly knew about Henry Hank Aaron.
A couple of really great pieces on the Ringer this week. I don't know if you read them, but addressing the racism that he dealt with and putting that in perspective in terms of his legacy, I would strongly recommend.
Sixth on the all-time WAR leaderboard, and three of those players played before on the leaderboard ahead of him played before integration. So
I don't know if you saw the other thing about the WAR, that like his seven best seasons was like above 8, and then his next 7 best seasons was right around, like, nothing was lower than like 6.8. You take his 7 best, his next 7 best, and then his 3rd 7 best. It's like each one of those benchmarks is like staggering,
insane.
Right, they're just ridiculous, off the charts. You know, ridiculous stats all over the place. And this guy, you know, for what it sounded like, he was quite the humanitarian outside of the game of baseball, still was around. If you watched social media, a lot of the Braves were really talking about that his presence, just to be around the organization, even up to the end there, was just something that they would just soak it in of just being around Hank Aaron, right? And yeah, it's just phenomenal what his imprint was on the game and outside of it as well.
Yeah, so Michael Bauman had a solid piece, but the one that I really wanted to spotlight was Lex Pryor wrote a piece called Hank Aaron Forced America to Change. It Never Changed Enough, remembering the life and legacy of a baseball icon who died at age 86. So I would strongly recommend folks head to the Ringer to read that one in particular, but also head to Baseball Reference and like look at those stats.
It's bananas.
It is bananas
how good he was. And it also kind of sucks just a little bit that we were $50 away from seeing an outfield of Hank Aaron and Willie Mays. $50. That was the difference in the signing bonus between Atlanta and New York.
Milwaukee and New York at that point.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
$50. $50. Which, I mean, a lot at the time, but at the same time, like imagine being the executive that missed out on
having this, Willie Mays and Hank Aaron together,
right?
Yeah.
Each one of those guys only won a single World Series. And you can't tell me that if they weren't in the same outfield, that they don't dominate that period.
It certainly can't hurt. That's for sure. So do we want to pivot off?
Let me just segue for a second here, because this will be good. Just before we go, because we might get into the next topic here, I just want this just about the insanity. Like, we just talked about just a sliver of all the incredible stats that he had on the field, right? So he gets inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1982, right? First ballot Hall of Famer, of course, right? At 97.8. So somehow 2.2%.
How do you not vote in Hank Aaron, right?
2.2% did not somehow feel, because again, it was that very silly, because Babe Ruth didn't get in at 100%. No one gets in at 100% at that time.
It's like, but this is the guy who passed Babe Ruth.
Right. It's just like
ridiculous.
So he needed to hit 800 home runs. He needed, you know.
No, in their eyes, probably.
2,500 career RBIs. Like, what would it be? Like, what number would it have been? There would have been no number, right?
Zuke, there's no number because we both know exactly the reason probably why he didn't get in at unanimous.
Sure.
Back then, in 82, there was probably some people who wrote him a letter in 74.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, you know, to this day, there, you know, there's still a lot of issues going on, right? But I mean, back then, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, that's, you know, so if Hank Aaron doesn't get in at 100%, you know, who does get in at 100%, right? Well, actually, now one.
And this year, no one. Not only does no one get in 100%, no one gets in at all. So that was the other thing that's happened since we last talked. And we were, of course, kind of keying up the idea that it might not happen. And Brian, I think you were the most ardent that
It wasn't going to happen. I mean, the you know, they always, you always track worse. Everybody always tracks worse on the non-shown ballots, because they're usually small hall regressive types. And while I'm sure that his opinions probably played super well with some of those people, Curt Schilling ended up missing out by 14 votes.
No, 16 votes.
Was it 16? My bad.
16 votes, 71.1%.
But you're right, Brian. 14 had blank ballots. They did not write anyone on the ballots. It was a record high on that. And so I don't know, you know, if it's a protest, I guess, or whatever, right? So do we want to get into this, right? We want to, like, because where are we at with this?
Well, I mean, first of all, so Bonds and Clemens, slight gain from last year, but still, like, they have 1 year left in eligibility, and mathematically, it's not going to happen. Certainly,
it's the second time in history, about,
you know, the home run king, and, you know, Barry Bonds is the one who eclipsed Hank Aaron, but the way in which he did it, there are huge question marks around. And so those question marks are the albatross around his neck as the Baseball Writers Association of America votes.
So two things. Yeah. One, it wasn't illegal during most of the time he was doing the drugs. Like, MLB did never rule against
it. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Never failed the test.
Second, like, the man had a Hall of Fame career before he even allegedly started juicing.
Right. This is, his numbers certainly suggest that had he just kind of played out the thing at the rate that he'd done it previously, he would have been a Hall of Famer. I think it would have been like maybe even like if he had
if he retired the day before he took his first needle, allegedly, he still would have made the Hall of Fame. Hands down.
Yeah, I mean, so the one thing is, I read this too, is that somehow Clemens and Bonds and the whole steroid era, let's say, isn't in, but somehow Bud Selig is in, who was the commissioner at the time,
which is a joke.
Just closed their eyes until 2004, and then all of a sudden, magically, hey, steroids existed, and now we're gonna ban it from the game, right? They had no problem during '98 with the home run derby with Sosa, McGuire, and that whole era. But all of a sudden, you know, we're gonna now do it, and somehow he got rewarded, and these guys get shunned. And that's
fact that Bud Selig got in immediately upon eligibility and Marvin Miller died and was, you know, put in posthumously by the Veterans Committee. Like, it's galling.
It's just baseball men doing baseball
like,
men things.
The person's impact on the future of baseball, like, and the positive impact, Marvin Miller, undoubtedly.
Yep.
Yeah. There's no doubt. I mean, so the elephant in the room is Curt Schilling, right? So the deal is, you know, I think a lot of gnashing of teeth this week, and I wanted to do a hot take and stuff, but I'll be honest here, is I just feel like there's been a lot talked about it. I think they should keep him on the ballot for the last one. I mean, I think he's just crying, you know, spilt milk here. But that said, is I think on the baseball, I think he's borderline, but I mean, you can make a case for him being a Hall of Famer. The other stuff outside, there's no doubt that doesn't merit, you know, as in that's not, it doesn't reflect well on him. But if you're just judging on baseball merits, you can make it. Well, I mean, he came 16 short. He's pretty close there, right? Like, if you take away the other noise, he's on track to get in next year, right? He's pretty close to sort of what Tim Raines or Jack Moore sort of did, was that they got close at the end there and kind of pushed their way through, right?
So of course, some of the people who voted and maybe submitted a ballot before January 6th,
right,
might reconsider after this guy endorsed overthrowing the government violently.
Yeah, and I mean, that's part of it too, right? Like, in on thebaseballhall.org, you can go and look at the BBWAA's rules for election, and underneath section 5, it says voting shall be based upon a player's record, playing ability, integrity, sportsmanship, character, and contributions to the teams which that player played. Pretty sure that Schilling fails three of those: integrity, sportsmanship, and character, just based on all of his actions both during and after his playing career, right? So like, if those are the criteria, he fails those.
Sure. I mean, but it depends on if you're, well, obviously enough, a lot of people voted regardless of that criteria, regardless of that.
Well, obviously it didn't matter enough to them.
Sure. I mean, well, and same thing about the PEDs, right? I mean, that's the whole dilemma about this whole this whole the voting of it, right? Because now you're looking at theoretically you could have two more years where people don't get in. Like, I mean, if you're going down the road of the PEDs, like next year,
right?
Well, wait a second, Ortiz and A-Rod, they should not get in.
Like, well, I don't think A-Rod will. I mean, I think he's trying his best to do the.
Sure, he's doing.
He's doing his best through the redemption tour, but I think Ortiz gets in.
But I don't know if he's a first ballot. Like he might be like a Piazza where people.
No, I think people love David Ortiz. I think he gets in.
Sure. But I mean, again, but then this gets to, okay, well, so he's lovable. So he gets in, he gets a slide where the other ones, like what was the difference between Piazza or the Astros.
I don't know. It's a good question. But
well, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah, it's nice that he's a fun loving guy and stuff, but no different that
you know who I think should get in, and this is you want to talk about hot takes, who sure. I think should get in that's on next year's ballot? Tim Lincecum.
Okay.
I think that guy's a Hall of Fame player. Two Cy Young Awards, two back to back Cy Young Awards, and like if you want to, if we put Sandy Koufax in to the Hall of Fame,
on a seven year peak, Brian, just stop it.
Are you seriously?
Don't even. You're not even being serious that you're.
Gonna Lincecum's peak is almost as high.
Stop.
Look, it's serious. I'm serious, Sook.
That is a very bad take. Very bad take. Lincecum, it doesn't even go near the sniff or the eye test.
Come on, Zook.
Sandy Koufax.
Come on, Zook.
You're talking about totally different eras, and you're talking about one of the most dominant pitchers. That you're talking about Hank Aaron. Sandy Koufax could be a top five pitcher of all time.
Sure, but he had a short career in a high peak.
Great, and guess what? He was
so did incredible. Tim Lincecum.
Tim, okay, stop.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Zook. You serious? Let's do this then. Two peak years of Sandy Koufax, very incredibly good. Right. We're talking about 65 and 62.
He wasn't the best player in his era. Tim Lincecum. Are you kidding me? Are you seriously
really good argument that he's really, really, really.
I'll tell you right now. He will not be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He probably will not be a Hall of Famer.
He should be. I think he should.
Okay. All right.
If we're talking about peak, I think Tim Lincecum should be in the Hall of Fame. They won't because no longevity. But if we're going to put people in, I'm saying if we're going to put people in because of their peak, like Sandy Koufax, Tim Lincecum was just as dominant over like a 4-year stretch as like just about any pitcher in Major League Baseball.
Not as much as.
Oh my goodness!
It's the difference in their two best years of WAR is like three full points.
I'll like give you
Tim,
this, Brian.
Tim Lincecum's best doesn't reach Sandy Koufax's third best.
I'm going to say this. I'll give you this, Brian. And you're probably the first one who's made a take that you're comparing.
Lincecum had 4 years of negative WAR. Koufax.
Yeah, well, I mean, some bad things happen at the end of his career. If he was forced to retire before he had those negative WAR seasons, like, you know, because like
then he has like six pretty decent years,
really good years.
Sandy Koufax had 12
not a
years, and six of those were fantastic.
No, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, if we're gonna put people in on
but peak, they weren't fantastic. Sandy Koufax could be top five pitcher of all time. I don't even know where we're. This isn't even in a discussion here. That's no. I mean, I get it, Brian. You want to look at all the peak stats? Does not do it for me at all. He wasn't even. He's not even on the radar for me. I mean, you're looking at that. Then you go down the list of who haven't got in. Andrew Jones, Gary Sheffield.
I think both of those guys should be in.
Scott Rowland,
Jeff.
I think those guys should be in too.
We could name. I'd put a long list before we're going to get to Lincecum. A long list before that, right? I don't know. I mean,
he was dominant. Saying, he was really dominant.
Okay, so here's my. I'm going to go back to my point of saying that we could be in now a couple more years before we see a Hall of Fame.
I think Ortiz gets in next year. And if A-Rod continues on his tour, I think A-Rod might get in.
I think that would be a travesty if A-Rod gets in.
Pettit might get in.
How is Pettit getting in? Well, he was at 13%.
He was at 13.7% this year.
I guess that's fair. Yeah, a lot of growth. Yeah,
there's
if anyone gets in next year and who's seen some growth, Scott, it's Roland.
Yeah, Scott.
I hope it's Roland. Roland deserves
to be. I like Roland as an you know, and that's sort of that slow build, and it's so weird about this, but it's also just sort of more information comes out, people kind of champion certain players, and delves into a bit more. I mean, that's obviously like the Tim Raines is always a good example. Larry Walker was another one of guys who kind of their campaign sort of over the years got better as a Hall of Fame. But it's just such a fascinating thing. I mean, it's so funny that it's the one thing that matters, like in the four major sports in North America. I mean, there's never this gnashing for like the NFL or the NHL or the NBA, right? It just sort of, hey, yeah, they're Hall of Famers. Yeah, that's all good. And every year it's fascinating. As much as baseball's maybe not, you know, at the top of the echelon for North America, every year when we get to the Hall of Fame, it brings out a lot of
Hall of Fame vote is kind of the equivalent of like the NBA hot stove.
It's because of the history, right? Baseball's a game that is based on history and stories and all that stuff, and you have
but this
150 year history to build upon. And not only that, but like the people that are in the Hall of Fame, for the most part, like it's for a game that it's been around as long as it has, it's a relatively small hall. Yeah, right, like the people that are in deserve to be in.
Well, that, but also I think there's a bit of the counter a bit of that is that it's very prestigious, right? The line is very slim to a very good player to a Hall of Fame player.
Sure, and that's right? What I mean. Like, and it's a small hall. It's a small hall for the amount of time that the game has been around, and you have to be elite to get in.
Right, it matters to get in there. People still care about it, regardless.
I think hockey is trying is kind of the same sort of vibe, right? Like people really care about the Hockey Hall of Fame. Yes, I think the only real difference is the process in which players get in. I think alienates people, right? Like in baseball, it's wide open. People know how like from year to year, they know the criteria. They know which players are on the ballot. And they know the percentage of which said players get in. In hockey, it's a completely closed off process. Yeah, and you don't know until they announce who's getting in. And so I think that's the only thing that's really holding it back. Basketball's Hall of Fame is a joke. Mitch Richmond's in the Hall of Fame. And it's like, okay, sure.
But that's a little bit different because that also includes, it's about the world. It's not the
NBA Hall of Fame.
It is. And actually, I'd also say it's also hockey is a bit like that. It's actually more of the world too. It's not just the NHL.
Well, and I mean, the Baseball Hall of Fame should be that way too, because it's called the Baseball Hall of Fame.
But
right?
but it isn't, because they also play the World Series and they're not playing, you know, China or Japan or something. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know,
but I'm saying that there should be Japanese, like how does, I say that Sadohara Oh should be in the, it should be in Cooperstown.
But
right?
it's not tied to major league baseball. That's right. It's a major right. league baseball.
But I mean, but like, but you still can't make a case of Mitch Richmond, even with world basketball.
No, but I think he's in because of college that's as what well. I'm saying it's called, there's the entirety. Yes. It's the entirety of his career, where in baseball, it's not about the minors or international, whatever. It's what you've done in the major league baseball. Period.
And like the Football Hall of Fame is just like, if you had a half decent career, you're in, right? So like it seems like,
and that's different because football is also, because you have people who've only had a short career, because the lifespan of football is a short career, right?
You're not gonna get an argument for me,
right? Where in baseball you can there is that longevity bit. There's usually you can play a game more than 2 years, right? Where in football, like a peak year.
I mean, those are part of the reasons why the Baseball Hall of Fame is so prestigious. That the length, the small hallness of it, the exclusivity of it, and the transparentness of the voting, I think all contribute.
Right, and I think that's sort of why sort of this week you sort of saw Curt Schilling do a little temper tantrum, right? Like,
guy's a moron.
Sure, but I'm just saying it was hard, I'm sure, on Larry Walker. It was hard on Tim Raines, Bert Blyleven, a lot of these guys who were close, who had many years of they thought they were Hall of Famers and not get in. It probably does wear on you a bit as a human being, right? Because you kind of think, hey, I'd like to be part of this group, because guess what? It's a pretty darn exclusive group, right? And there's not you know, there's only so many that can get there. And it does then just, it puts that stamp of validation that no one can kind of take away, right? I mean, as much as Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens says, oh, they don't care if they're going to, they know they're Hall of Famers, but that they don't, that they're not going to get it. Well, then that's on them also, because they also jeopardize their sure. Hall of Fame career by doing what they did. Right. So yeah. that's it's a fascinating discussion. I feel every year, because people care about it. As for whatever reason, it matters to people.
There's only a second time in the history of baseball that nobody has gotten in, by the way.
No,
I read a tweet that said
that was more ninth time. Yeah. But so it was the second time in like only
the most
like
recent
the
last... was 2013. Before that, 1996. Before that, 1971. But there was a stretch.
I misspoke then. My apologies.
No, it's all right. But I think the one thing is also why this is a bit more jarring is since 2013, I think we've had like 20 some players get into Hall of Fame. There's been a huge influx. And so you're almost sort of used to two or three going in every year in the last little bit, and this time there wasn't any. It was close, but it didn't happen. And now it'll be interesting what happens the next couple of years. But yeah, it's been a while for zero.
I wonder if you guys stand on Curt Schilling asking to be removed for next year.
No, screw that.
No, that's sour grapes. He's in, and he should be on the ballot just like everyone else is. And if he doesn't get in, he wants it. Also, I feel this is an excuse, right? I took myself off the ballot, so you know they had their chance, and now I'll just go to the Veterans Committee. Hey, you go the 10 years, and if they don't vote you in, they all can go through the veterans. But I just feel it's a bit sour grapes, you know. And he's also frustrated, I'm sure, too, because he's been pummeled in the media, you know, rightfully. But you know, it's of his own making. So I mean, for me, I just think he stays on the ballot, and if he gets in, he gets in. If he doesn't on his last year, he doesn't.
I hope he doesn't get in. Screw that
guy. I don't think he's going to.
I honestly think he's going to lose some votes.
Yeah, I think this was
throwing the temper tantrum. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. No, but also just the recent comments. Yeah, but the insurrection and all that. I think that didn't help things, right? So
like he'd had a bad reputation prior to that, but then, you know, to like stand behind those people at this point in time.
It was a bit of a doubling down, which if you were already on the fence about him, that probably would push you off the fence. I mean, he came close. This would have been the year to get in because it was kind of wide open, and your vote was in before he had made those recent comments. But I would agree with Michael. I don't think he gains anything. If anything, he's going to lose. He'll be probably in the 60% next year again, especially with the couple of the new ones, A-Rod and Ortiz coming in, and Lincecum. And so that
God bless big time Timmy Jim.
Yeah. And that'll take away a couple votes there as well. And then it'll probably be a rise for Scott Rolen. I think Rolen, well, if anyone, I think outside of the two newcomers, I think Rolen actually really has a chance to get close. I don't think he gets in next year, but I think he gets a lot closer.
Yeah, because he's only halfway through his eligibility.
I think he's four or five. So I mean, that's just sort of how that build goes sometimes. And if it works, it kind of works a bit in the pocket, because the next big one I think isn't for a couple years. There's Beltran, and then there's Ichiro coming in and stuff like that. But there's a bit of a pocket the next couple years that there isn't like a lot of slam dunks.
Yeah, Ichiro, Beltran, and DJ, I think, are all the big names that are coming up. Just one more thing on Curt Schilling. I saw an article today and had to double take, and it ended up being The Onion. But like, I believed it to be true for half a second because of like how close to the real thing it actually is. And when the stuff that you say in real life is so close that I can't tell the difference in between real and an Onion parody, that's pretty bad.
It does say something about what you're, you know, known for saying. I do want to tip my cap to Dan Heron, who subtweeted Curt Schilling.
What a
that
hero.
Was great.
He's so funny.
He didn't receive a single ballot. And so, of course, with the rules, he won't be on next year's ballot. But he tweeted out that he's going to be he's removing himself from next year's ballot and any going forward.
Very good self-deprecation there about
he's
that.
He's hilarious. That's fantastic. I'm a big fan of Dan Heron.
He's apparently gone after...
Michael, do you have the list real quick before we go? Do you have the list of who is voting? Because I think LaTroy Hawkins got a vote. Like, it's really like I'm always fascinated at the bottom because there's always someone who just votes because they just want to give him a vote or something like that. But I think LaTroy Hawkins got one or two votes for some apparent reason.
I thought I had the so the list.
Rasmus Ramirez got okay. So here we go. Some weird names that ended up getting votes. Rasmus Ramirez got 4 votes. Wow. LaTroy Hawkins got 2.
Yep.
And Barry Zito got 1. Guys, I didn't know I didn't know our friend Connor's voting for the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Well, no, because the other thing is I feel this is going a little deep into pop culture, but I feel someone might have voted for Barry Zito because he was actually on The Masked Singer last year.
Maybe.
So maybe someone just voted just for the heck of it because he was a good singer for some reason. or allegedly a good singer in a mask. It's just weird. I feel that somewhere these are jokes almost because how could these guys even get any votes? But they do sometimes because you have 10 on a ballot. So what are you doing, right? So at the 9th or 10th, what does it matter, I guess? I don't know.
There were 5 folks who didn't get a single ballot. And so they are completely removed. So that's AJ Burnett, Shane Victorino, Dan Heron, Michael Kadire, and Nick Swisher.
None of those guys deserved to be in.
And then Aramis Ramirez and LaTroy Hawkins did not achieve 5%. So they are off as well. So Tim Hudson and Torrey Hunter, I guess, were the only ones on their first ballots. Oh, and Mark Burley to get over 5%.
We love Mark. I love Mark Burley. I don't know if the rest of the podcast loves Mark Burley.
I have an issue with him because, of course, he played for the White Sox during a period
fun to watch, though. God, sure
you liked him, you know.
He played for the Blue Jays, but he was fun to watch even before that because you knew if you sat down and you knew Mark Burley was pitching, you were going to get out of there in a crisp 2.5 hours.
I certainly think he was an efficient pitcher, but that didn't endear him to me when he pitched against my Twins.
You know what? And I'll tell you this because we're out of time here, but next week I will give it up to Brian and the Blue Jays. We will talk extensively about their offseason because I will say that they might have done a couple things the last little bit. That's pretty.
I got to give props impressive. Right now. I promised I would do this. I got to give props to the Yankees.
Oh, boy.
They've had a good offseason so far. It hasn't been a great offseason, but they've done some stuff.
Well, they kept LeMahieu, so.
And they did, and the Mets might have one more here before we're done. So they're looking to get the big picture, right? So we'll see what happens if that gets finalized for
next
week.
The Yankees trade for Jameson Taillon as well.
Yep.
So I guess we're going to end with praising the Mets and Yankees. Good Lord, yes, it's time to shut this show off. Stick around, though, with Democracy Now! Is coming up in a bit, and of course,
the pity party.
Bring you the saddest songs to console you
to lighten your life.
Strike 3, you're out.